Hello everybody, and indeed today is the 26th of August. Fucked it up right out of the gate. 26th of August 2015. This is me, Sami Shah, right here behind the microphone and behind the steering wheel, and you are listening to Sami Says. Let's see what's going on. I'm driving to Perth right now. Actually, I'm driving to a suburb on the outskirts of Perth, which is called Secret Harbour. That's actually the name of the fucking suburb. It's between Perth and the town of Mandurah, and I think more towards the Mandurah side than the Perth side. And yeah, it's literally named Secret Harbour. That's the name of the suburb, and I can guarantee you it is nothing as exciting as the name will be. It'll probably just be a bunch of houses and a bar, and we're performing in this comedy night at the bar. But yeah, that's what it's called. So let's see what happens tonight. It is 5:57 in the evening. I am driving through a spectacular sunset. That's just one of the things that WA just keeps knocking out of the park. Just fucking 5 stars, WA, good job, is the sunsets here. Just unbelievable. Violet and crimson and pink and purple and just bruise. The color of a bruise and the color of an apple and the color of love and the color of crimson. And anyway, so lots of different colors are happening above me as I drive down the Great Eastern Highway at a manageable speed. There have been several fatal car crashes on this road in the last few weeks. And people always mystify. They're like, oh, why is everyone driving so badly? These are the tourists. I'm like, no, it's because the fucking speed limit is 110 kilometers an hour, which is an insanely high speed limit anyway. And then you factor in the point, the fact that basically no one observes the speed limit. Everyone on this road that I have seen in 3 years of doing this drives at 130. And so no wonder there's car crashes, because when you're hurtling down the road at 130 kilometers an hour and you're 96 years old, which is the average age of the people who live here, your reflexes aren't that fast. So you're not going to swerve the car properly when a kangaroo or a fox comes in front. Good God, man. I wish you guys could see the sunset here. Honestly, it's just, this is one thing that I really, really appreciate in Australia, is the skies and the sunsets. Because Karachi skies are basically, they're slightly higher than your eyebrows, and they are just grey. And not like the cool storm grey, like gunmetal grey. They're like the grey of a corpse that's been rotting for a little while. Like, that's the colour of a Karachi sky usually. So this is a pretty spectacular sky I'm seeing right now. I know this, I really should just turn this podcast into Sky Talk with Sami Shah and bore the rest of you to sleep, finally, once and for all. But I'm not going to do that right now. Right now, instead, we're just going to talk about the things that are going on in my life. Stephen Fry is coming to Australia. That was announced today. That's pretty fucking amazing. Stephen Fry is doing a tour of New Zealand and Australia. And he'd mentioned, like, when I met him at QI at the recording, he said, yes, I'm due to come down to Australia. But he'd mentioned that he was going to be in Brisbane. And that was it. I think it was supposed to be just a personal kind of holiday or meeting or something with someone. And then he's turned it into an entire tour. And he's coming to Perth as well. And so, this morning I went online. The tickets went on a pre-sale this morning at like 12 o'clock. 12 noon, actually. And I went online and I bought 2 tickets right in the front, like pricey fucking tickets right up front to see Stephen Fry. And the thing is, I really also want to meet him again. I feel like I've got some... Ah, man, like, it's one of those things that... Okay, so I've done QI, right? I got to meet him. I got to spend time with him. I did QI. And from the messages I've gotten from the producers who are editing my episode of QI these days, in fact, apparently I knocked it out of the park. I'm really proud of myself, and apparently they're really happy with what I've done there. And so Stephen Fry coming here means I should be able to, at the very least, say hi to the man, which I would very much like to do. I would very much like to say hi to him again and, just get a chance to, just chat with him a little bit more. And... But there's a certain level of celebrity where these things happen all the time. You know, when Stephen Fry comes here, I'm sure there's certain celebrities in Australia who will be able to just give him a call and meet up with him, or get their agent to call his agent and go for dinner with him and things like that. And I've to date been able to go to the functions and events and have the same kind of exposure that a lot of these major celebrities have. I've been on television repeatedly. I've been, you know, on QI, Soho Theatre, all these things at the top level comedians. But I am not that. That's why I always feel like a bit of a fraud or something, because I still don't even have an agent. I don't have a promoter. And, I you know, it's still just me doing things by myself. Good God, what an amazing sky. Sorry. It really is fantastic. It's apocalyptic almost. That's what it looks like. I don't know, man. So now I'm basically using all my meager resources to get in touch with him. Because here's what I really want to do. Is when he comes to Perth and he does his show here, they probably have someone who announces him onto the stage, you know, does the housekeeping, like turn off your phones and things, like an MC, and then moderates the Q&A session at the end of the show. I want to be that guy, because I know what will happen. They'll normally get some person from the ABC who's got experience doing that and do a very good job and everything, but I've got a personal connection there, and I'll knock it out of the fucking park, man. I know what I'm good at, and I can handle that kind of thing really easily. But anyone else who wants to do that at that level, you know, open for Stephen Fry, if you will, or MC Stephen Fry, would be a person who'd call their agent. Tell the agent, oh, Stephen Fry is coming here. Can you get in touch with his people and tell him that I would like to open for him? You know, that's what would happen. And then a Jane Hutchinson or someone like that from the ABC or Russell Wolf or someone would be able to, you know, make it happen. I don't have those contacts. I don't have that ability. So what I can do is I can email the producers at BBC and the producers at QI and stuff who I've met and worked with, and just beg them and say, look, I know this is embarrassing for both of us. This is, you know, I should be more, I should be at a higher point in my career to be asking for this, and you should be not having to deal with this. But it's what I'm going to do is I'm going to just say that I would like to get in touch with Stephen Fry and say that, hey, remember me. Let's hang out. So can I have a contact information to do that? And so I sent out a flurry of emails this morning. And of course, it's nighttime in London when I sent them out. And now it's actually work hours in London. It's probably around noon by now. But I haven't heard anything back yet. So I don't think it's going to happen, to be very honest. I think I'm just going to sit near the front, and I'm going to hope and pray that he sees me and recognizes me. And then, you know, when the show finishes, I can go up to security or someone and say, hey, can you tell him that Samisha from, you know, the QI episode that I almost urinated on is here and would like to say hi. Like, that's what I think will end up happening. Hopefully. Let's see. Oh, but man, I'm trying. I'm hustling. God damn it. So much of this game is hustling. That's just it. So much of it is just trying things. Like, I've got a book with a publisher right now that the publisher is not signing off on, because they know, and I know, that it's a book that, you know, an Australian publisher like Allen & Unwin won't be able to sell to the Australian market very well, because it's set entirely in Pakistan. The Australian market is too insular for a book like that. So I should probably actually get into the hands of Hodder or you know, Hachette, or like one of the big international publishers like that. But I don't have any contacts in those areas. The contacts I have are in local publishing over here, like Allen & Unwin. So now I'm hoping that I can convince them to pass it on to one of their bigger publishers, and they're hoping that they can actually do that as well, because then obviously they get a percentage, so they'd be thrilled with that. But I can't take the risk of just waiting for that one. I wrote that book 3 years ago. I think after this, I'm kind of done flogging it. So I've got another book that they're actually far more interested in, but I've only done 2 drafts of it. I have 2 more drafts to go. And so I need to sit down and start editing that. But in the meantime, I've got another book idea, which I also want to start working on. And I keep kind of inching towards it slowly and surely. And so that's something I'm doing. So that's one thing I've got going in the works. The ABC finally locked in a radio documentary series that I've been pitching to them for literally 6 months. You know, calling them up, calling the producers, harassing them, telling them, hey, I know what I want to do. I know I can do it well. Let's have and then they have a meeting, then they have another meeting, then they have another meeting. And finally, we got the go-ahead that we're doing this. You know, and it's going to be excellent. I think it's going to be fantastic. I think it's going to be something quite groundbreaking and revolutionary in content and in style and approach. But it took me a while to get here. And so I've been hustling to get that done. And then in the meantime, I'm hustling constantly to, you know, keep getting my weekly radio gigs on the ABC and to also keep writing columns for so-and-so and, you know, for Fairfax Regional Media or for Scoop Magazine or Brisbane Courier Mail. And then you're hustling to do stand-up and you're hustling to do gigs everywhere and you're hustling to work up new material. And it's a lot of it. It's work is what it is. I keep calling it hustling, but it's really is just work. But man, it takes a fucking toll after a while. You got to have a lot of irons burning in the fire at the same time. And if you do 10, if you try 10 things, I think one of them works out. And some of them usually take years to work out. The BBC thing I did where I went to London and did the you know, Beginner's Guide to Pakistan, for which, by the way, Ed Morish, the producer, sent me the final edit. It sounds fucking fantastic. I'm so proud of it. And that's going to be on air in England end of September and early October. But yeah, that thing took, what, 2.5-3 years to do. I remember Ed first spoke to me about that when I just moved to Australia. And we finally did it this year, you know. And so, yeah, these things take time. But when you got to make a living, then you got to have a ton of things working so that between the project you're pitching now that will see fruition 4 years from now, you've got a ton of other work lined up that will keep putting food on the plate, which is, I guess, you know, that's what the game is. But anyway, so that's been the big thing in my mind right now. Anya had a school, had her sports day today, so I was there all afternoon. They had the school sports carnival, and a lot of sibilants in that. So yeah, the school sports carnival, and it was good. It was fun. It was a lot of standing in the sun from 11 o'clock to 3 o'clock. And Anya has all the athleticism of her father. So, you know, she came second last in the race. And then she came... but, you know, she did well in the egg and spoon and stuff. She's very precise with her movements and stuff. She's just not very fast with them. I was like that. Sports day in school back when I was a kid was a fucking weird thing. Because our school didn't give a shit about sports. Like, I went to a foundation public school in Karachi. And FPS wasn't known for its athletics program. It was a very academically focused school. And so, you know, like our sports day stuff would be literally one day the school would just, you know, the teachers would come and say, oh, today we're having sports day. So everyone in their school uniform with their school shoes on, which are formal brown shoes, would just end up going down to the sports stadium, the national sports stadium in the city. And doing a whole bunch of running and jumping and climbing and hiding and all that stuff. And yeah, no warm-ups, no practice, no nothing. It's not like we did running exercises normally and everything. Normally when we'd have a PE day in school or a PE class in school, we just play football or cricket or we just, you know, beat each other to death as you do. And I remember, like, I used to run. And up until, I think, 6th grade or up until 8th grade, I was fucking slow. I was always last or second last. Always. I don't know why. I just couldn't bring myself to run fast. I remember at one point, my best friend Taimur, who was the fastest person in the universe, basically. Like, he was insanely fast. He was in another school, though. So he was like, yeah, I'll train you. So, like, he and I start running. And I'm going all out. And he's next to me. And I'm keeping a pace with him. And I was amazed at myself. I was like, oh, my God. I'm keeping up with Taimur. And then Taimur says, okay, we're done jogging. Now let's actually run. And he just blazes off into the distance. And I'm yelling in the background going, but I am running. So, yeah, that's what... You know, that's what happened for me. And then I remember in 8th grade, just something clicked. I think puberty kind of caught up to me. And once my balls dropped, I somehow became faster. And then in the 8th grade or the 9th grade sports day, the race happened and I suddenly came second. And I just burst through the ranks and kind of came second. And it was a close second, which is an insane thing because the kid who came first, his name was Mudassir, was a demon. That guy ran so fast. It was insane. Like, I remember Mudassir would run and everyone else would be like 30 yards behind him. Always. And but I almost came close to, you know, beating and tying with Mudassir, for example. Mudassir, by the way, was a weird kid because I remember he was short, really short, like up to my, I think just my elbow even, like that kind of short. Just too tall to be a midget, but still short. And he was a really weird, like, talkative kid. He'd talk fast and act fast and think fast and everything, and then he'd sit next to you and then he'd molest you in class. Like, that was a weird fucking thing. Like, you know, like, child molestation happens when, like, teachers molest, or like, in my case, it was my Quran teacher, and then a shopkeeper in the neighborhood I lived in. Like, he used to molest me quite regularly, and then my Quran teacher tried dry humping me once, and that's all in the I Migrant book. But Mudassir, like, he was this guy that he'd try molesting us himself, like, and he was our age. It was really fucking weird. Like, I'd sit next to him, and because the teacher would assign you seating, so I'm sitting next to him in math class, and the two of us are doing equations, and Mudassir just reaches over with one hand and starts rubbing my thigh, and he's rubbing my thigh, like, all the length of it, vigorously, fervently, with a passion, and then he's, you know, he's got the hands running. And he's rubbing it and rubbing it and rubbing it. And then after that, once Mudassir's, you know, done getting whatever joys he can out of my upper thigh, like, he moves to the upper thigh area. And then he starts massaging my inner thigh. And I'm just sitting next to him doing my math this entire time, going, in my head, I remember thinking, what the fuck is going on? And this is like seventh grade. And he's just this guy who's rubbing my thigh until finally I'm just like, dude. And then he stops. And he goes back to doing his math. And we don't talk about it, nothing. And we just hang out anyway. And we're fine. We're perfectly, you know, good friends. And then the next day, you'd sit next to Mudassir. And he'd try cupping your balls. Like, that was fucking Mudassir. Like, it wasn't even... I don't even know if it was sexual molestation. I think it was just sexual exploration on his part. And it was a thing of, like, I guess I'll see what I can get away with. And I wonder if he was gay. Because I don't even think he was gay. I think the way it was done was, it was just anybody. I think, like, there's a vagueness to Pakistani male sexuality, where a lot of Pakistani men are so sexually frustrated they'll dry hump anyone or anything, because, and it's got nothing to do with being homosexual or bisexual or anything. It's just they are sexual and they just want a soft surface. That's all it is. You can be an animal, mineral, vegetable, it doesn't matter. I think Mudassir was like that. He probably came from a bit of a closed off family, and he liked to get off on rubbing my thighs. Oh, I have sexy thighs though, so I don't know, maybe I was skinny as fuck, so maybe I had effeminate thighs. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe my feminine physique was what got him. I wonder if he ever masturbated thinking of me. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about anymore. Oh, God. So, yeah, that was sports day back then, man. It was, it's weird. Like, I had this realization the other day, even. Because I'm on WhatsApp, right? Now, I talk to all my friends, my childhood friends and stuff, and they're all on WhatsApp. It's a whole group. And it's all these guys I grew up with. And they were doing their... And they were talking. And whenever Desi guys, Pakistani Indian guys, get together... And I'm assuming it's the same for white guys and stuff as well. Is whenever a bunch of guys get together, the conversation just turns invariably to... I guess in English you'd call it horn doggery. In Urdu, it's called tarki pana. You know, like when you're just fucking horny. And your entire conversation is just about, like... women and tits and ass and who you want to fuck and how much you want to fuck them and things like that. And that's all, like, my friends are talking about on WhatsApp all the time. Like, I go in there and eventually got to the point where I was like, dude, are you guys, like, did you guys turn 13 and get forced into, like, a boys' school? Like, why are you so fucking horny? And they're all married, but, you know, at the same time, if you're that horny, go have sex with your spouse. Or go cheat on your spouse. Do whatever you take. Just, well, how is this the only thing you're willing to talk about? And they get angry with me. They're like, oh, but I called them out. And I'm like, how fucking, like, horny are you? And one of them was like, oh, Mr. Samishan on his high horse. Like, oh, you think you're better than us. And you're telling me you don't remember that girl 9 years ago at my wedding whose photograph I took with my phone. You don't remember her? And I was like, no, dude, I don't fucking remember her. Like, I'm sorry. And part of it is also, because maybe I've just had more, I've been lucky enough to have more beautiful women in my life on a general basis. I worked in news and in Dawn News, especially in Karachi back in the day, and that was just, every girl there was just beautiful and intelligent and spectacular, and just I fell in love on a daily basis back there. And then I guess maybe that's just part of the thing. I've had more exposure to women, or maybe I don't know. I think maybe what it is I get up on stage and I talk about personal things, including, you know, if I'm feeling horny, I'll talk about that on stage and make a joke about it, and so I get all that out of my system. All these guys, I guess with their spouses, they can't openly talk about what they're feeling and thinking and stuff, and so they just bottle that shit up and come in, and it just becomes this, like, it's a conversation filled with gum. Because I was meeting a whole bunch of Pakistani and Indian people in Perth recently, and we were all standing around, all the men were standing around talking. It was the same thing. It was just, yeah, that guy, that, you know, oh, I remember that chick, and remember that girl, and remember that girl, and remember that, and all of them, like, they get money together, and then they go and see strippers, and I've never seen a stripper. I think I went to a strip club once in college, and even then, after the first, like, half an hour, I got bored. I remember walking in to the strip club in college with my friends. My friends were like, hey, this is a strip club. And I was like, oh my God. And there's naked women everywhere. And they were just like, there's a woman swinging from a pole and flashing a vagina in your face. And you're like, this is amazing. There's just naked women everywhere. And then half an hour into it, I was like, is this it? Like, I just sit here and watch the naked women. And then somehow that's supposed to be satisfying. And I started looking at the men there, and they look kind of sad. And then I remember, I think I burnt the edge of a cork and used that to just kind of draw one of the women on a table. And so the other strippers started chatting with me, because they're like, oh, I like what you're doing there and this and that, and draw me next and everything. And my friends got pissed off with me. But I wasn't, maybe it's because in art class, I'd seen lots of naked women in college. I do figure drawing. And so it wasn't a big deal for me. I don't know. But I realized part of it is because, like, I hang out with comedians. Like, when male comedians hang out, one of the things we really don't bother talking about is how horny we are and who we want to fuck. No one gives a shit. We process all that shit on stage. When male comedians hang out, male and female comedians and everyone, when comedians hang out, the conversation is pretty fun. It's intelligent, and it's full of, like, information, and it's also full of just ripping into each other and one-upping each other, and that's how we, like, enjoy ourselves. Our fun isn't, oh yeah, did you see that chick and her tits were great, now I want to fuck her. Our conversation is, you know, I'll make fun of you, then you make fun of me, then we make fun of someone else, and then we somehow fit that into politics, and somehow fit that into something, movies, and yeah, that's what we talk. I don't know, man. I'm wondering whether I'm losing the ability to tolerate civilians, because the conversation level is just too embarrassing. It really is. Like, I was astonished when I realized that the same thing was happening in every conversation I was taking part in. Just, oh, chick, look at that chick, look at that chick. I don't give a shit. I don't give a fuck. Yes, if I'm horny, I will go have sex. I don't need to stand here talking to you about it. It fills me with no joy. It satisfies no urges. It's just sad. So anyway, that was a weird realization I had recently, where I think that's why I prefer hanging out with comedians. I think I just, the more and more I do comedy, the less suited I become to mingle with humans. I worry. Let's see what else is going on. I've been watching a lot of Netflix at night, and the Fringe show Islamofarsis is a lock, so I've been researching that and working on that and kind of slowly building up steam towards that. Rotterfest is coming up, so that's exciting. Going to be that. I'm doing 4 shows, it turns out. I said yes to 2 shows, and then there's the 2 galas, which I didn't know. So I'm doing 4 shows in one day at Rotterfest on Rottnest Island. But I'll go there Friday night, stay there all day Saturday, come back on Sunday. That way I can spend 2 nights there and just, you know, hang out with everyone and drink up a little bit and stuff. I've been drinking a bit more than normal, but not like alcoholic level or like, you know, masking a pain, or pain go bye-bye juice, as Patton Oswalt called it once in a special. You know what it is? It's basically, I've finally, for the first time, really started enjoying the taste of certain alcohols. I never did before. So like when I came to Australia, I started enjoying the taste of different craft beers. But craft beers, while some of them may be good, they really pack on the calories. You know, the stomach really builds up, expands fast. So I've been trying to cut down on those. And so I got a bottle of scotch, but like good scotch. I got a Glenfiddich, and it was a very nice one, and I had that. It was good. I enjoyed drinking that. My grandfather, from my mom's side of the family, he used to drink a glass of scotch every night. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Maybe I can do that. And I was like, wait, that's what alcoholics do. Like, maybe every night is not a good idea. So I kept doing social occasions and stuff. But then I went and got... I went to Xavier Suse's house. Xavier is a comedian in Perth. And he's been collecting Japanese scotches. Japanese whiskeys. And so I tried some over there. And it was fantastic. So I, you know, went and bought two bottles of my own. They're fucking expensive. So every now and then I'll pour myself a double shot of that in a glass and kind of sip it while I work. That's what I like. I don't want alcohol that you chug. I like sipping stuff. So sometimes I'll do that. And then someone gifted me a crate of, for my birthday, someone gifted me a crate of wines. It's mostly whites, which I prefer over reds largely. Like, I think the only thing I like in reds is a good Merlot. But these are all whites. And so I started drinking those, and now that's becoming a thing. So I need to cut down on that a lot. But you know what? I realized what it is, because it hit me last night. Last night I was watching TV, practicing the guitar, and I just felt the urge for a cigarette. That craving that hasn't been there for a year. Like, 24th of August was my birthday. And thank you, everyone, for the birthday wishes. I got tons of great birthday wishes and stuff. I really appreciated all of it. 37, don't give a fuck. 37 is an arbitrary number and a stupid year. No one gives a shit. Like, 40 is when I'll properly celebrate. So we just got a cake and that was it. But a lot, you know, it was a nice thing. But last year on 24th of August is when I quit smoking. So this 24th of August was my 1 year anniversary of quitting cigarettes. And I've been really good about it. I really haven't felt the cravings as such. But man, it's been hitting me recently. And that's because I think I've also, you know, cutting down on the drinking and everything. I'm trying to lose some weight and I'm trying to watch my figure, if you will. And I'm just sitting there, you know, watching some movies and stuff. And the weather's just right for when I enjoy smoking, which is, it's cold, but not too cold. It's a nice chill air. And I just, last night, I craved it so badly, suddenly, like, just watching TV and this sudden hunger for nicotine came over me. And that thing of like, just go stand outside and puff, pull on a cigarette and, oh God, it feels so fucking great. And I almost succumbed. Like, I'm so glad I didn't, but it took a lot of strength to kind of hold on to that. I don't know, man. I don't want to. It's been a year. I don't want to slip back down. I'm healthier than I've ever been. I'm feeling fitter and stronger. My lungs are doing more than they've ever done. And, you know, I'm running the 5K, I'm doing Sean T's insanity fucking workout, which is just the worst. Oh my God, it's so fucking hard. Sean T is, if I told you last time, he's this fucking ex-dancer, like, he used to dance for Madonna and stuff, and he's this guy who's basically carved out of a slab of hairless wood. And just ripped and defined, and he does this, like, workout regime called Insanity, and it's entire cardio based, and you do it at home, or, you know, in the privacy, you can do it at home, you don't have to go to a gym, and you don't require weights, and so it's extra intense on the cardio because it doesn't require have all that stuff. And the idea is you follow the whole diet, and I'm not doing the dieting. I've given up enough in my life to also now, you know, start dieting and give up the joys of eating. I'm cutting down on the eating. I'm eating smaller portions and I'm eating more fruit and vegetables and stuff during the day, as opposed to just, you know, chocolate biscuits. Fucking chocolate biscuits have been my kryptonite for since I came to Australia. Like, no more Tim Tams in my house. No more of that stuff. Although I say that, but as I'm driving, I have a box of Ferrero Rocher right next to me, which I probably shouldn't have bought, but I fucking caved. I've been, you know, cutting down all that stuff, and I've been doing the workouts, and it's just 45 minutes to an hour of just hardcore cardio. and you collapse at the end of it, and I can't breathe, and I'm just cursing at Shanti with all the strength I have left in my body. But it's intense, and you can see the results. Like, that's just it. If there were no results, I wouldn't do it, but I can definitely, I've been doing it a week, and I look in the mirror, I'm definitely fitter and you know, all of that. So I, oh man, but it sucks. I hate working out so much. I hate it. I hate it. Hate it with a passion. A thousand suns. But you know, it's just, it's one of those things where I, 37 years old, man, this is where shit starts, slowly starts sagging, starts hanging down. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that uncle in my family who was skinny with a giant belly and perky mantids. I don't want perky mantids. So that's why I got to work out then. I got to maintain. I got to lose the weight and I got to maintain. And this will probably be the most boring episode, Sammy says, to date, by the way. I don't know how or why you guys listen. I really appreciate the fact that you do. You have no idea how much it means to me that you guys are still hanging in there and listening and sending me feedback and all that stuff. It really means a lot to me. But I don't know why and how you do it, though. Because if, honestly, guys, someone made me listen to this podcast, I would probably stab myself in the ears and then the eyes and then stab the person who made me listen to it. But you guys are awesome and I love every one of you. Alright, as always, you can call me, you can email me at samisha@gmail.com, twitter.com/samishah, S-A-M-I-S-H-A-H is the standard spelling and all that. www.samisha.com is the web address. Go to iTunes and subscribe through there and post a feedback or a comment or something and give it a rating. It really helps me out. And yeah, that's just facebook.com/samisha.fans. And if any of you know how I can get in touch with Stephen Fry once again and, you know, do that thing, make that happen, then please tell me. I'm keen to hear. I've been Sami Shah. This has been Sami Says.